It is my great pleasure, it is my profound privilege on behalf of Many Rivers to welcome Kazuaki Tanahashi, as well as Christine Haggerty, here to speak tonight. Kazuaki Tanahashi, I have no doubt many of you are aware, is a world-renowned calligrapher, painter, author, translator of... I myself was on vacation recently and was reading this book again. And as you see, we have here a number of his works, but we're particularly focusing tonight, of course, on this tome. It's the product of 50 years, which is a really amazing thing to be able to say, I think. And so I, for one, am very much looking forward to hearing what Kazuaki Tanahashi and Christine Haggerty have to say about this project. And we are so grateful for their coming tonight to join us at Many Rivers. Thank you so much.
So nice to see everybody here to talk about listen about the Shogogenzo and such an intimate, right kind of in your face kind of audience. I wanted to introduce Kaz for a reason that in 2000 I went on a journey with he and Joan Halifax, following in Dogen's footsteps. And we started out in China, and we didn't take the boat like Dogen did, but we got to Teotong Monastery and were allowed to sit in a room similar to the room that Dogen would have sat in. And at that time, Beyond Thinking had just recently come out, and we read excerpts from his teacher, Ruijing, and passed the book around. And it was like Kaz was holding Dogen's hand and we were holding Kaz's hand. And if that doesn't describe lineage in a Buddhist context, I don't know what does. It is just such a continuity. And for him to spend his life really taking the time to transmit this information to all of us is just such a profound experience that I wanted to be able to introduce him as a translator, a peace activist, a calligrapher, and my friend, Kazuaki Tanahashi.
Good evening. Do I need to clip on something?
No.
No? So nice to see you. Thank you, Rob and Jim. Many Rivers books and tea. It's a joyous, very joyous occasion for myself. After this work is completed, don't worry, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I think I started in 1960 with my teacher, Soichi Nakamura Roshi, to translate Shogogenzo, Dogen's life work into modern Japanese in 1960. So I guess it makes me the slowest translator of Zen Master Dogen. In my early 20s, I was looking for a spiritual guide as a beginning artist. And as most of the people did in 1950s. I went to existentialism. And then I kind of studied Albert Camus, The Stranger, and all that. And then I kind of realized that to be a good artist in existential way, you have to be fully in despair and then completely bored. So I thought it wouldn't work for me. So I was looking around, and then I ran into Dogen's poems and just a small part of Shobo Genzo, his life work. Dogen is, he was born in 1200. So it's kind of easy to figure out his kind of age in Japan. And then he practiced, studied Buddhism, but he was not satisfied with the kind of Japanese practice and understanding of Buddhism. So he went to China with his teacher, Myozen, in 1223. So he was 23 years old in the kind of Western way of counting. In the Japanese way of counting, maybe 24. And then stayed there for 3 years, 4 years. And then met his teacher, Wu Xin, at the Tiantong Monastery, and received his teachings and transmission of Dharma, and then went back to Japan. So 1227 until 1233, I would call it wandering period. He did not have any temple of his own. He was, and then that time he created just one essay called Bendora. On Endeavor of the Way. It was maybe most complete, comprehensive kind of summary of his own understanding of Buddha Dharma through the kind of perspectives of Zen Buddhism, which was new in Japan at that time. And then 1233, he started a new monastery in a kind of old temple, and then built a new meditation hall. And so built a monastery in the south of Kyoto, the capital city of Japan at that time. And then he started writing some essays, and many of the essays were kind of presented to his practicing community, or sometimes he just wrote it. But each time he wrote a colophon, kind of the note, you know, when and where this piece was done, and then whether it was presented. So it was like a lecture. Maybe he wrote an essay, but meant to be read to his community. I didn't know when I ran into, I found Dogen's writings. I didn't understand what he was saying, but I felt that there was something very vast and profound, and I was really attracted. And then I had a show, my first show in 1960 in the city of Nagoya. usually in Japan, it's still so. I think artists rent a gallery for 6 days. And seventh day, you take down and someone else install. So my paintings, a little calligraphic, black and white. I noticed an old man would come every day. And then usually artists will be present. It's a short time. I'm just meeting people or some friends come. So artists are expected to be at the gallery. And then I got to know this man. And, he was a Zen priest, and then he had an organization called the Zen Culture Institute. And before that, I was going to a Protestant church. My family is Shinto, and I didn't have any kind of background for Buddhism. So my paintings were not Zen, but somehow Nakamura Roshi wanted to feature my artwork in his quarterly magazine called Zen Culture. So we became friends. One day I said, Roshi, I think Shobo Genzo is great. I don't really understand it, but... And then I've read that there are only three people in Japan who understand Shobo Genzo. You must be one of them. So it'd be really helpful if you would translate Shobo Genzo into modern Japanese. There's not such things like that. And he said, yeah, I will, if you help me. So I said, yeah, I'll be happy to help you. So we started meeting, and once a week, in one afternoon, we spent the whole afternoon trying to translate just one sentence from medieval Japanese to modern Japanese. And we kept on doing this. I like to read one piece, I think. This is supposed to be a reading, so I should read. Two volumes. So if you see that this is the kind of wandering period, from here to here, and then the rest of this is a Kosho monastery period in south of Kyoto. So you can see kind of maybe almost half of his writing was done in this period, 1233 to 1243. So 10 years plus this time. He was 33 years old, up to 43 years old. So how many pieces he wrote? Maybe 46 essays. We call it fascicles because it's not a volume. Volume is usually in English. It's kind of like a book, but this is chapter-length writing that is bound separately. So we call it fascicles. And altogether, usually 95 fascicles version is common. In the 17th century, it was compiled But we found another one in different versions. So it's 96 fascicles we have. Yeah. And then close to the end of his Kōshō monastery period, which was a small monastery, and it's rather informal setting. It was informal setting. An essay called Undivided Activity. Here, Dogen talks about birth and death, and in Buddhism, you know, it is taught that at each moment we are born and die many times. So instead of life, often Buddhists would say birth and death. But you can sort of convert that to life and death. So birth can be life. Birth is just like riding in a boat. You raise the sails and you steer. Although you maneuver the sail and the pole, the boat gives you a ride. And without the boat, you couldn't ride. But you ride in the boat, and your riding makes the boat what it is. At just such a moment, there is nothing but the world of boat. The sky, the water, and the shore are all the boat's world, which is not the same as a world that is not the boat's. Thus, you make birth what it is. You make birth your birth. When you ride in a boat, your body, mind, and environs together are the undivided activity of the boat. The entire earth and the entire sky are both the undivided activity of the boat. Thus, birth is nothing but you. You are nothing but birth. I was very encouraged that as an artist, I had this sense that, oh, I can get an idea and I plan and then I do, kind of, I paint. So I'm responsible. And I can kind of create something that is different from maybe what I do some other time or by other people. Maybe I can live my life kind of fully instead of sort of going along with some kind of flow of life, you know. So I was really encouraged, and then I was intrigued the idea that kind of this my life is undivided from other parts of the world, other people's. So my life can be lived with the all other things, with the entire world. Of course, I don't understand why or how, but it was quite amazing that someone was saying such a thing. I really wanted to know why he was saying such a thing. So that was my initial interest and love and with Dogen. So there was no other modern translations of Shobo Genzo. It was so difficult, and then I realized that I have to study Chinese, Buddhist philosophy, and Zen kind of thinking, maybe Zen practice. I have to do some practice. And Sanskrit, I have to work. So I found a tutor for my Sanskrit studies. And gradually, little by little, I worked further with Nakamura Roshi. And then in 1964, I was invited by a friend who was teaching art in Washington, D.C., at American University. So I brought some paintings, but also I wanted to meet some Zen practitioners. So I met, I was in Honolulu and met Bob Aitken, now later became Roshi. And then he said I should meet Suzuki, Reverend Suzuki, in San Francisco. So I met with him. And I was really impressed with people who are really practicing seriously Zen. After kind of staying in the mainland, well, North America, I went back to Hawaii, and then Bob Aitken and then I translated Genjo Koan, which we translated as realizing the truth, something like that. Later we retranslated as, well, later maybe some other people and I retranslated as actualizing the fundamental point. Maybe the most famous, the most beautiful piece by Dogen, perhaps one of the greatest masterpieces of Japanese literature. I went back to Japan and said to Nakamura Roshi, now let me just kind of translate it first and then you check and we don't have to work together. And I'll kind of dictate my translation into a tape recorder, and then we form a kind of group of volunteers, and then they can transcribe the work, and then you check that. So that kind of process became kind of faster. I think the reason I thought I could kind of translate it more efficiently was that I sort of, by working with Bob Aitken and then translating in the kind of Dogen's writing into English, I felt maybe the secret of translation is deconstruction, not just trying to kind of convert the kind of terms or kind of syntax, but just forget about everything, and just the Japanese grammar and so forth, but find the most suitable way that is sort of gives a similar meaning and then kind of similar kind of poetic kind of impact to the readers of the other language. And then I thought I could apply this principle, translating Japanese to Japanese too. So we completed this modern translation 6 years after we started, 1968, so published in 4 volumes and 1 dictionary. So that was the first modern translation of Shogogen's Dogen's life work. And then I thought, well, I really like to translate it more into English. But instead of kind of translating it in my study in Japan, I really like to study, translate with serious practitioners of Zen in the U.S. I thought of San Francisco Zen Center, and then I thought I really wanted to go and work with people. I sort of felt that most Japanese translator would kind of translate in Japan and then ask maybe native speaker of English to check. But I don't think it was good enough. I had to. First of all, I was not a serious practitioner of Zen. I was kind of more interested in Dogen's words and concepts and all that. So I needed to work with people who are really serious practitioners who could who have some experiences of actual practices what Dogen was talking about. I wrote to Richard Baker Rossi, who was the abbot of San Francisco Zen Center at that time, and he invited me to come, and then 1977, I moved to San Francisco from Japan and worked for Zen Center as a scholar in residence. And I worked with kind of students of Zen Center then. Ed Brown, Blanche Hartman, Mel Whiteman, and so forth. And so usually I can work kind of one-to-one on certain text. So usually I have... So all together we have over 30 co-translators. Why Dogen? Well, when we started publishing translations in Moon, Dewdrop, Enlightenment, and Fall Beyond Thinking, we have to tell people why. Why are we kind of writing this and presenting it to the world? My sense is that Dogen was one of the greatest elucidators of meditation in all spiritual traditions. So whatever meditation you do, yoga, or qigong, Tibetan meditation, it may be helpful to kind of see what Dogen really describes, maybe technique, and the state of meditation, what kind of state, and how we practice together in the community, how the practice is related to season, ethics, and all other parts of our kind of life. Dogen may have answers. And then I met Peter Levitt, a wonderful poet who now lives in British Columbia, and asked him to be my associate editor. And he has been helping working with me for about 8 years. It's been so wonderful that real native speaker, wonderful writer and poet checks kind of every word many times. I think he went over 4 or 5 times. So after this these volumes were published, and then Peter said, how do you describe Dogen's teaching in one word? I said, what do you think? And he said, intimacy. Mm-hmm. We're interested. You know, close to, kind of, close friends, but also maybe close to ourselves, and then also close to all things, you know? I mean, with no gap, no language, or no concept or anything, but how do you experience reality directly? I guess that's what he meant. And I said, non-separation. I think it's about the same thing, you know, non-separation. So it's quite amazing that this 13th century thinker or writer says time is existence. That's quite amazing. It's a kind of contemporary concept in physics. Why did kind of could he kind of, arrive at such a concept? Because I think he sees all things not separate. So he applies this kind of experience to everything, time and existence, or practice and the enlightenment, you know, others and then the self, and so forth. So in a way it's kind of simple, because Dogen puts different things together. I like to read my most favorite passage of Dogen from Continuous Practice. In fact, I have that in the epigram too. But let me read this part. I think this really summarizes Dogen's teaching. On the great road of Buddha ancestors, there is always unsurpassable practice, continuous and sustained. It forms the circle of the way and is never cut off. Between aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, there is not a moment's gap. Continuous practice is the circle of the way. This being so, continuous practice is undivided, not forced by you or others. The power of this continuous practice confirms you, as well as others. It means your practice affects the entire earth and the entire sky in the 10 directions. Although not noticed by others or by yourself, it is so. So this circle of the way seems to be kind of the phrase Dogen kind of invented or coined. And so in each moment there is aspiration for enlightenment, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana. Nirvana in Dogen's sense, maybe it's non-duality, non-separation. So this way, even kind of the beginner's kind of meditation for a moment, there is enlightenment. Practice is enlightenment, cannot be divided. It's not just kind of enlightenment becomes kind of better and better and improved. Dogen's idea is enlightenment is kind of unsurpassable, kind of single enlightenment, same enlightenment from the beginning. That's good news. Bad news is we usually don't notice it, and you know, we kind of think of the pain in back or in, sleepiness or distraction, and you know, all kinds of things. But Dogen says, he doesn't really talk about bad zazen. He talks that sitting in the kind of in the form of the Buddha or awakened person, you are already enlightened. So throughout his life, I think that is the single most important thing Dogen talks about. It's always so much fun with a friend and sitting with Dogen and trying to bring his message into another language. Kind of maybe the most accurate or most effective way, maybe most kind of direct or a genuine way from what Dogen said, and just kind of involving kind of our master and then asking him questions and then creating some translation has been always a joyous experience. And I often say we have tea and then should we go back to the 13th century? So it's like time machine. We become 700 years younger. I think I'll read one more passage that shows his poetry, poetic thinking. But before that, I'd like to show you that if you can see, this is a monastery construction period. So there's only 2 years, and then he was most prolific at that time. So it's interesting. Sometimes he gave two talks. He presented two classicals in one day. And many of them are short, but he never talked about building a monastery. he never talked about his own business. And, interesting, 1243 to 1245, something like that. So 2 years plus. And then we had, and then after the monastery was built, he wrote only this much. Mm-hmm. And then he was more interested in writing monastic guidelines. And he was really kind of so rigorous about creating forms. So a lot of things you find in even, you know, maybe local Zen center, how you enter the Zendo and how to bow and how to do ceremony, and everything is prescribed by Dogen. Of course, he brought it from China, so much of them came from China. I think maybe part of his wisdom was that if you have a form, and people can kind of follow, and then it's kind of easy. And because his life was so kind of defined, you know, what time to get up and what to do, all that. Or in spite of that, his kind of imagination was kind of so free, kind of flying kind of all over. And then there are some undated pieces, and then we have this much appendix. And I'm proud of myself in a way that we have this lineage chart of Chinese Zen masters. Usually it's done kind of in a vertical way, and then you say, okay, this is A1, and you have to go to find another kind of one dash or something like that, and it's all confusing. But and then always vertical. And then I thought, well, maybe this is America. Why don't we have this kind of teacher-student relationship horizontal? And the English language, it's kind of more natural. So everything is kind of very straight. And then, you know, everything is straight. And we have generations. So we have glossary, and then, you know, okay, which page, which generation. And it's very easy to find Chinese Zen practitioners. Chinese Zen is a little bit funny word, Chan. But, and then we have a lot of glossary. I think 4,000 entries, so it's like a small Buddhist dictionary. It is quite gratifying that you know, the Shambhala publications could perceive such a kind of big project, you know, 1,200 pages, something. When Bob Aitken and I started translating one piece of Dogen in 1965, there was only one book on Soto is by Reho Masunaga called Soto Approach to Zen. And then there is one translation of Genjo Kon by Dogen. So there was only one book that time. And now in this, in the glossary, no, in the bibliography of this book, we have over 50 books that has Dogen in the main or subtitle. So for an East Asian kind of a Buddhist teacher or writer, it's kind of rather amazing that people like Dogen for one reason or something. People really like Dogen. And, so I'm so grateful that this book has been published. And let me just read one passage. This is called a passage from a fascicle called King of Samadhis. Samadhi is a Sanskrit word, state of meditation. To transcend the world directly, to manifest the magnificence of the Buddha ancestor's house. This is sitting in meditation posture. To leap over the heads of outsiders and demons and become a true person inside the Buddha ancestor's room. This is sitting in the meditation posture. To sit in the meditation posture is to transcend the deepest and most intimate teaching of Buddha ancestors. Thus, Buddha ancestors practiced this way without needing to do anything else. This was translated by Norman Fisher and myself. Yeah, Dogen's main teaching is you just sit. That's the kind of most direct way of experiencing the Buddha's heart. Know that the world of sitting practice is far different from other worlds. Clarify this for yourself, then activate the aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana of the Buddha ancestors. Study the world at the very moment of sitting. Is it vertical or horizontal? At the very moment of sitting, what is sitting? Is it an acrobat's graceful somersault? Or the rapid darting of a fish? Is it thinking or not thinking? Is it doing or not doing? Is it sitting within sitting? Is it sitting within body-mind? Is it sitting, letting go of sitting within sitting? Or letting go of sitting within body-mind? Investigate this in every possible way. Sit in the body's meditation posture. Sit in the mind's meditation posture. Sit in the meditation posture of letting go of body mind, body dash mind. If you have any thought or questions or any objections, yes, please.
When we speak a sentence in a straight line, we're older at the end of the sentence than we were at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But if we speak a sentence in a circle or in another form, then we aren't older the end of the sentence than we were.
Profound. That's profound. Maybe we can kind of speak like a circle going on and on.
Well, this is about continuous. It's about continuous practice and seeing the circle as continuous practice.
Mm-hmm.
And as a model of continuous practice, You can look at the movement of a sentence and the integrity of each individual word, how each individual word in the sentence is separated from the one before it. And just that movement. And language plays a big role in our sense of movement and time, and our idea of language almost molds and forms our idea of time. I just look at the. This is just one of my explorations.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Dogen was, and then Dogen comes from this tradition that is suspicious of language, and trying to find a way to kind of go beyond the language. That's Chinese Zen was mostly, often they would call themselves not depending on words. And so his maybe exercise is kind of trying to go beyond language. It sort of adds up to this much language.
Yeah. Okay, so is Dogon one person, or it is a title?
Dogen is a Ehe Dogen. Ehe is a monastery. Dogen is a person.
So it's one life, one gentleman.
Yeah, he lived from 1200 up to 1250.
Okay, and his priest, maybe scribe.
Monk.
These are words that monk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call him scribe, but. He was a Zen teacher and maybe leader of monastic community. He was obviously a writer, thinker, a poet.
Does it ever get shortened to dog? Would that the tarot has a character that I've never understood, and it's called a dog. And he looks like a priest. And I'm trying to figure out if they're talking.
Well, that's kind of English. You know. Japanese has nothing to do. I know. Dogen has nothing to do. Actually, it means the do is a way, and gen is a like a source of the way. Dogen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, which did you find more challenging and more enjoyable, translating from medieval Japanese to modern Japanese or modern Japanese to English?
You know, I think translating from Japanese to Japanese, sometimes you don't need to understand it. You sort of, you know, kind of use the original words and then them together, which I tried to avoid, and then maybe what I did was kind of overdoing it, translating Bodhisattva as a seeker, and then now we have like 7 or 8 translations, much better translations. They kind of made it a little bit more kind of less radical, and. And I think I don't really pretend that I fully understand Dogen, but when I have a partner, and then first I roughly translate, it's something like this, so why don't we just kind of find a way to make sense in English? So that way we have to make a decision. Well, it looks like he could say 2 things, or could be interpreted in 2 ways, but we have to make a decision this time. So it's more demanding, I think, translating into English. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Were these all written, or were they oral talks that were transcribed in the original with Dogen? And was it a teisho? Was he talking to his community and then it got written down later?
I think he wrote the draft first. Mm-hmm. And then some of them were given to his students and then not presented to the community. But when he presented to the community, I think he read it, and maybe not questions, but he just read it. Some of them pretty long, but and Dogen was maybe one of the first people, probably the first one, who used the Japanese way of writing, which is a combination of Chinese characters and the Japanese phonetics. Before that, official kind of Buddhist language in Japan was Chinese. Mm-hmm. It's kind of pronounced it in a Japanese way, but written exactly the same as Chinese. So that makes Dogen maybe one of the first translators of kind of Chinese Buddhist texts or way of thinking into on Japanese. Japanese has Japanese is a very grammatical language. It has conjugations and, you know, cases. Chinese don't. So Chinese are very rich and then very ambiguous. That makes it more poetic and rich. But you can kind of interpret it in different ways. But Japanese, you can't do that. So like one of the phrases, plum blossoms open early spring. Usually we say in early spring, right? Plum blossoms. But Dogen translated as kind of plum blossoms open the early spring, which is kind of more poetic. And also it's more like an importance of individual action. You know, you open the kind of entire spring. You know, the spring is the experience of all-inclusive kind of enlightenment or experience. Yes.
I enjoyed Moon in a Dewdrop many years ago, loved it, and I've also read Dogen's collection, Dogen's poetry. And I wonder if you could explain how the other books relate to Shogo Genzo. Are they separate, or does this include what would have been in other books?
Oh, yeah. So we have like three previous books. Moon in a Dewdrop, Enlightenment Unfold, and Beyond Thinking. In those books, we have 42 fascicles of Shogo Genzo. So now we have 96. So this is somewhat kind of new translation, not necessarily the first translation. You know, there are other translations, three complete translations. Nishiyama translation, Nishijima translation, Shasta Abbey translation, which is a kind of online publication. We are the fourth translators. But we, Peter Levitt and I, revised everything to have more consistency.
And is the poetry, some of his poetry included in there?
No. And then another important work of Dogen is called Eihei Koroku, kind of extensive record of Eihei Dogen. It was published. Translation was done by Taigen Dan Leighton and Shohaku Okumura, came from Wisdom Publications. It's a monumental work. Yeah. Yes.
So I'm curious about how the work on the translation touched or informed your life as an artist. See those affecting each other?
Well, I think, you know, I do calligraphy and painting, right. But also I do writings, writing poems and so forth. I think these are two separate things, like visual art and then writing. I think writing has to be kind of perfect. I mean, you know, when it is published, it has to be kind of done, edited over and over times by many people, and it should be, you know, without error. And you know, painting is a little bit different. It's sort of, you know, you just do it like this, and then I call myself not expressionist, but explosionist. I can kind of, you know, do it free. I don't really know. I think I just like Dogen. I like to hang out with him. But I'm not really interested in what he was doing or what he was telling us to do. I'm an artist. I like to be free. In a way, it's good to have a teacher who is safely dead for 7 years. Yes.
You said there were four translations of Shobo Genzo.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's a lot.
Yes, amazing. Yeah.
I'm amazed. Mm-hmm. Do you have any insights about what in the English-speaking world? What in English-speaking culture is attracted to Dogen? Because that's a huge amount of translation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, people kind of like meditation, and it's different from Japan. Japan, you know, not so many people really do meditation as daily practice. Something, you know, well, priests do all these things, and then lay people don't really do. Like at Sokoji, you know, in San Francisco, Suzuki Roshi was taking care of Japanese American community, and then kind of that time non-Japanese people wanted to practice Zazen. But Japanese members were not doing Zazen at all, actually. Mm-hmm. So maybe people's kind of real interest in meditation, I think that's, and then Dogen was maybe in a way enigmatic. He's kind of mysterious. You know, what he says, you know, doesn't make sense in a usual way. I think if we meditate, we sort of figure out, you know, but without, it's like Heart Sutra doesn't make sense if you don't meditate. And then also there's another great translation coming. It's Carl Biefeld, you know, professor of Stanford University, and his colleagues kind of are doing kind of Soto school kind of funded translations, very scholarly. So their aim is maybe kind of sufficient materials with a lot of notations for the future translators or future scholars. So this is a great work. That's coming too. And actually this year they will be completing the 75 kind of fascicles, which is a kind of fascicle Dogen himself kind of edited. Ours is more ignoring Dogen's own edition, but we put them in a chronological order. Mm-hmm. so that we can follow his kind of evolution of his thinking. And we kind of maybe we want to kind of create an illusion that Dogen was teaching in English. So we don't want, you know, the publisher says, okay, why don't we put the original Japanese title kind of, you know, in the main section. I said, no, we are trying to create this illusion. And in a way, I think there was so much contribution by kind of my co-translators. And this is an American kind of translation. This is so American friends can feel ownership to that. So that's my kind of my hope. Thank you so much.
On behalf of Many Rivers, thank you so much for this wonderful event. Very much appreciated. I want to point out several things to our guests. We obviously have copies of Kazuaki Tanahashi's works here, including the one he's been reading from tonight. And we also have a donation bowl over on the counter, which we encourage you to contribute to. That is to support the work of our speakers and also to support this space and maintain it for future events such as this. So, once again, thank you so much to our speaker tonight and to all of you for coming. Thank you.
One other thing I'd like to add. Kaz is here for a weekend workshop, so if there's any artists in the group, we're going to be doing a calligraphy workshop on Saturday and Sunday, and there's still some room in it. So, if you're interested, see me after.
That's up here in the north.
Yeah, it's right off River Road at Trenton. So it's kind of in between Forestville and Santa Rosa.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.